We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And we are live right now. Welcome to the Tuesday RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, the Jake and Joe edition, obviously, which takes place every Tuesday leading up to the actual NFL playoffs. Today's show, we're going to focus on, obviously, all the news and notes for training camp and a full week one of preseason contest, as well as a recap of my NFFC draft, as well as all the other people who are participating in that. Ended up being a pretty big industry draft overall.
Sorry.
I don't know what Jake's doing, but it's fine. Again, welcome to the Tuesday RotoWire NFL podcast brought to you by Dynasty Owner. Before we get things underway, let's get a word from our sponsors, Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Are you ready for a new challenge this year? Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an actual NFL franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that'll test your skills as an owner and general manager. You will have to you'll have complete control over your team's future, and you can build the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap with those real-life NFL contracts. Can you create a dynasty of champions? Sign up now at dynastyowner.com. Use promo code ROTO5, that's R-O-T-O-5, to get $5 off your new team. You are listening right now to the Dynasty Owner Expert Champion. I wish everybody else would be plugging that because I feel like it's very valuable. I have the trophy and T-shirt to celebrate my Dynasty Owner Expert League Championship. It's fine. I just want the rest of the RotoWire NFL podcast to acknowledge me, so to speak. Roman Reigns reference, but it's fine.
Yeah, why don't you wear the shirt next time? That'll do your plug.
That'll do it perfectly. All right, yeah, so obviously tons of breaking news and just news and notes over this past weekend that occurred. A lot of different injury things, and I think we have to first discuss Zach Wilson a little bit. Obviously, was feared that he tore his ACL. I think that was Friday. Yep. Then we had news Saturday morning. Known factor is actually more of a meniscus tear and a bone bruise. He might actually be ready for week one. He just had the surgery today. Adam Schefter reported that Wilson is still considering week one. So am I. I would love to play week one of the NFL. Might not be a guarantee, though, and I would not be surprised at all if the Jets take things slow. So, Jake, here you go. Your first of many probably victory laps throughout the season. We had just talked last week about how I was scoffing at Joe Flacco starting an NFL game. And, like, I was scoffing at the fact that he would start over Zach Wilson. It wasn't that Zach Wilson was hurt. But fine, whatever you want, Jake. You can go ahead and celebrate this
one. So you know what? One of my favorite like monikers, I guess, in sports journalism is, Wilson had successful knee surgery, right? Did they ever report that it was unsuccessful?
It's the Tyrod Taylor surgery.
They totally botched that situation. Yeah, they totally botched his knee surgery. So, but apparently he just needed a clean up procedure. 2 to 4 weeks is the timeline. No surprises from the original diagnosis, according to Rich Cimini.
Which was huge. That's what they were worried about.
So they were pretty much hoping that it was just going to be meniscus and that's what the case was. So it looks like Joe Flacco is going to go ahead and start week one. Of course, there's some narrative right off the bat because it's a revenge game against the Ravens. Week one, where the Jets are 7-point home underdogs. And I don't know how much.
I'm taking the Ravens the points.
I had to look that up just out of curiosity. It happens week one, maybe week two, if they're extra careful, they should be extra careful with the guy who's apparently the future of their franchise. But, I don't know. It doesn't change my Elijah Moore outlook. No. I still kind of like him. It doesn't change the fact that I'm a little sleepier on Breece Hall than most. and you know, that I like, that I'm snagging Michael Carter a little bit later in drafts. So you know, I could be unique in that, but you know, a quarterback change week one doesn't do a whole lot for the fantasy outlook of these guys, and you shouldn't see it reflected much in the ADP either.
Yeah, the biggest move would be if Elijah Moore was comfortably falling into the sixth round. I feel like a few drafts you can catch that, but otherwise not really. And we'll go over the one that I just had with the NFFC where he went in the fifth round. Yeah, I mean, that would be the only change that really matters for me. If Wilson was out long-term, I imagine most of those guys' ADP would fall somewhat, even though you must love Joe Flacco, Jake, because you had to talk about it last week and bring that into the universe, but it's fine.
Yeah, so, I mean, just for perspective here, Elijah Moore's ADP since August 1st on the NFFC is 63, so puts him just outside the fifth round, which, you know, I'm cool with that. But I, like it's, as what happened in your draft, I can absolutely understand the case for, you know, sneaking into the tail end of the fifth round too.
One of the guys I did take in my draft, again, we'll be reviewing it towards the end of the show, was Drake London. This was after his injury, which occurred in the, I think it was the Friday or Saturday preseason game. They all come together for me. It was not meant to be serious, or it's supposed to not be serious, but he was not practicing today. That's not much of a surprise when it is a knee injury and you're talking about a top 10 overall pick this year. I still am completely committed to London so long as I know he's playing for the majority of the season. If he misses like week one or two, I would be fine with it. Where are you at right now with Drake London and his status given this injury he occurred and picked up over the preseason?
Yeah, I used to always be a little hesitant on rookie wide receivers in fantasy. And then guys like Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson came out and shattered that mold completely here. So I need to adapt to that way of thinking a little bit. And, you know, I wasn't quite ready to pay the price that, you know, that London is demanding here. And, you know, looking at the NFFC, which again, we'll continue to reference throughout that show, a top 80 player, you know, and below him, you could get guys like someone like Alan Lazard is below him, for example, or, you know, Devontae Smith's right by him. And I just, when even Tyler Lockett down at 95, you know, when making that choice, I'd stick to a slightly more proven commodity. And not only is it the Falcons, who will probably be one of the worst teams in the league this year, you know, Mariota, Ritter, whoever's throwing him the ball at any point, which I guess those two will probably split time at points during the season. It worries me a little bit, and especially with a rookie receiver. But at the same time, I contradict myself, and I kind of like Kyle Pitts too. So, but I still haven't put my money where my mouth is. I don't have any Pitts shares yet this year.
Maybe that'll change.
Maybe that'll change Tuesday in the Stake League auction. We'll see if Mario lets that happen or not, or if you and Mario let that happen.
I was going to say, I don't think Mario's actually in the Stake League draft this year. It's just me and John carrying the poll for the Kyle Pitts team. And I guarantee you, we will price him accordingly, Jake.
Yeah, are you guys going to bump him up to like $40 like Kelsey then?
Or? Whatever the Mark Andrews price is, you can safely say Kyle Pitts will be just a buck or two below that.
That's a safe choice. I believe that.
We had Juju Smith-Schuster mispractice on Tuesday with knee soreness. Jalen Waddle was also out of practice with an undisclosed issue. KJ Hamler, obviously Broncos wild. This is important because he's now kind of jumped a little bit above the last round best ball sort of pick after the Tim Patrick out for the season injury. KJ Hamler, not at practice. I don't think he was practicing either Saturday or Sunday either with his own knee issue. And we have obviously Mike Evans, who last Saturday had the hamstring issue, still isn't practicing yet. Most of the Bucs guys did not play in their week one contest. That's Chris Godwin, Julio Jones, Mike Evans, Russell Gage. All their top four wideouts were held out of that initial preseason contest. So a lot of news from a wide receiver perspective. I'm not sure which one is most actionable to you.
Yeah, like I said, there's a whole big list of these. And, you know, none of these are crazy actionable for me yet.
Okay.
Except for Hamler, maybe, because it's his first year coming off the ACL, and he tore the ACL in week three of last year. So, I don't know, that might make me a little more hesitant to snag him up in the last rounds of those best balls, or as the last pick in, say, like a 14-team league. You know, that's not it's not looking the same. And, you know, remember, he's still behind Sutton and Judy and probably Albert O in the pecking order for targets there, too. So,
would you take Sammy Watkins or KJ Hamler with your last pick in best ball?
In best ball? Boy, see, I'm going to actually take Sammy Watkins.
So I was at there
because
too.
It's the last pick, right? So what do you have to lose? I'll take my Packer. And people forget Sammy Watkins is only 29 years old. He feels like he should be 35, shouldn't he? He feels like he's been around forever, and you know, with injury years, but he's been in the league since 2014. But 29 years old with a Hall of Fame quarterback. Who knows what could happen?
Yeah, the Commanders had an interesting day Saturday. Obviously, there was their first preseason contest. The Carson Wentz showing was mild, as much of Carson Wentz's career seems to be. Antonio Gibson was the biggest loser, possibly of all week one preseason contests. Had the fumble, was then replaced by Brian Robinson. We already know the Alabama back has been pushing for some more short yardage and goal line work. There are some people in the Brian Robinson hive mind that are thinking he is going to be the starter for the Commanders. And after this bad outing for Antonio Gibson, he was spotted working in the special teams. I don't know if this means anything whatsoever, other than it seems a little bit troubling that your starting running back is on special teams other than returning kicks and punts. And even then, we saw it with the Falcons last year with Cordell Patterson. You want to use your best players on offense, not on special teams. And yet, this doesn't seem to be the case for the Commanders. Should you be worried about taking Antonio Gibson in the sixth or seventh round?
His price is almost coming down enough to the point where I think I would consider it. Since August 1st, his ADP is all the way down to 65. That puts him behind guys like Elijah Mitchell and A.J. Dillon, and I think that's appropriate. And the next running backs behind him are Tony Pollard and Devin Singletary, who I actually kind of like Singletary this year. So I guess, I probably won't have much Gibson unless his price continues to plummet here. The thing is, I don't have a ton of confidence in Brian Robinson necessarily either. I mean, he was a third-round pick, so you got to imagine he'll get his shot sooner or later. But, you know, he was always right around 5 yards a carry at Alabama, you know, which – you maybe expect to be a little more than that. And you know, they got J.D. McKissic for pass catching anyway. So maybe Robinson – I can see Robinson having a year similar to, say, Kenneth Gainwell last year. And even where the usage was very sporadic, he would get some random one-yard, two-yard touchdowns, but you couldn't really rely on him on a week-to-week basis. And Kenneth Gainwell last year might even be the ceiling for Brian Robinson for me. So that's the cop I'm kind of going to make. I think that might even be maybe a little bit of a stretch to call that a ceiling because Gainwell had that positive, he'll see some TV regression.
Yeah, I think last week we talked about the auto new draft I did for just a little bit. There was a few Brian Robinson supporters in there, and I made the bet that I think he'll be on a CFL team by year two before he'll actually be the starter for the Commanders. I don't know if I was doing it more in jest, but I really am not a fan of him from a talent perspective whatsoever. I tend to defer to John McKechnie and Mario Puig when it comes to all things incoming rookies. And they had both said, kind of like with Kenny Pickett, if we didn't have this COVID season, there's no way Brian Robinson is even drafted. And obviously he was able to benefit this extra year. Yeah, I'm pretty convinced he's not very good. But I also don't know. Antonio Gibson's had a lot of stuff going on over the last 2 years. And if the Commanders do want to move off him, I can see them making a dumb choice. Like it would be dumb to play Brian Robinson over Antonio Gibson. But that doesn't mean the Commanders won't do it. You know, like, does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, I could easily see it happens, especially if, I'm looking at Antonio Gibson's fumble history.
Right.
He did fumble the ball six times last year. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's week six and he's fumbling for the third time, you know.
For a Ron Rivera, you know.
Ron Rivera will have had it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, again, it might not be the smart decision, but I could see it happening, yeah. I mean, I should have known Antonio Gibson fell to like the fifth round in June.
Right.
And he was at one point considered like, you know, maybe in the third round coming back. You know, that was kind of where he was being taken. So his stock is steadily plummeting. I'm hoping it plummets a little bit more because eventually, you know, the upside with how good that we believe he is, you know, if he gets down to like, if he's down in the sixth round, I'll take him.
Yeah, that's perfect.
If he's down in the sixth round, then he's mine. But until then, you know, I can find fifth round backs.
What I'm learning is that come next week, Tuesday, when we do the Stake League auction, I'm going to nominate Singletary, Gibson, and Miles Sanders, and you are going to have three wasted roster spots, and I will already have the advantage. Even if you get them for $10, I don't care, because I want zero of those players whatsoever. And literally, yeah, anytime I
can touch Miles Sanders, I think.
Oh, okay. Sorry. This is too stingy. Too stingy for Jake to take.
Why is it that you don't like Singletary? We can get into this a little bit. He's the projected starting running back on possibly the best offense in the National Football League.
I think for sure.
And so Zach Moss isn't going to threaten him. Jim Johnson probably won't even make the roster. James Cook, I guess we'll see. James Cook interests me to some degree. I did take him in the Dynasty
League. Don't want him either.
But for year one, you don't like Singletary?
I feel like this is a running back by committee that is all sorts of incorrect usage for the running back by committee. And also, I don't see a scenario where any of them are getting a whole lot of goal line touchdowns. You got to think, remember, Josh Allen is by far the best weapon in the red zone from a quarterback position since P. Cam Newton. Like, that's what Josh Allen is best at. It's not being quarterback. It's being that bludgeoning threat near the goal line. And I think there has a lot of value to that. Maybe the Bills take a little bit of pressure off that when he's...
How many times are they going to call his number to be the... This is the man that's building the stadium.
I know. I know.
How many times, hey, be the bludgeoning force at the goal line, please? Do you think they want to see that ever?
I know. I was going to say that's the $240 million man, right? That they're going to take away some of those opportunities. Is Singletary the one that gets them? No. Is James Cook? No. I actually think Zach Moss would be the person that would fit that. To be honest, I think the Bills are going to do something to improve that third running back spot. And it's just it's an uncomfortable RBC that I just don't want. And I had Singletary last year and used him effectively. Like, I get the value for it.
If he's $10, I'm jumping all over that. I think there's no way he'll be single digit.
This is the perfect nomination strategy. I'm just going to get him on. I'm going to go ahead and throw out Antonio Gibson.
Me losing $10.
No, 20. You're going to lose 20 on both those guys and have to worry about the roster spots. That's your problem.
All right. Well, let's see it. This will be fun.
All right, so we also had Chase Claypool now announcing he's 100% healthy, back for the Steelers in their pass-catching core. That's fine. He's going in the 9th or 10th round in most competitive redraft formats. Obviously, they have Najee Harris. They have Deontay Johnson, who surprisingly signed an extension. He's going to be around for the next 3 years. And then you had George Pickens, who had that great touchdown catch in week one of the preseason and also absolutely obliterated that Seahawks cornerback in what is going to be easily one of the best blocks of the year. I know you haven't seen it yet, Jake, but you need to take your time because it is the peace sign to him after he pushed him to the ground. He pancakes and then peace. Like, as much as you might have some concerns about George Pickens in the mental capacity, that was a pretty badass move that I love. So they are deep at wide receiver, as they always are, but this is going to be an interesting receiving core.
Taking a page out of the Lazard book, Lazard was always one of the best blocking receivers in the whole National Football League, and now he'll hopefully.
Are you moving Claypool up at all now that he's officially announced he's healthy?
I have, the outlook stays the same. It was more or less a line on the news pool to say, or in our news portion, to say that all the Steelers are healthy and that while this offense looks amazing except for their quarterback. So we'll see where that goes. But 9th round, I could be talked into a 9th round guy. He's a guy that could, he could definitely outperform that ADP. People forget how, he was getting some positive touchdown luck for sure, you know, on some of those breakaway passes and some of his huge games. But he did seem like a pretty dynamic, electrifying player. And, we'll just see if Michigan can get him the ball.
Well, since I know that your guys are Devin Singletary and Antonio Gibson, it's only fair, Jake, for me to tell you that my guy, J.K. Dobbins, is now back at practice and at least participating in individual drills. We haven't seen him yet in 11-on-11 situations. I would doubt we see Dobbins at all this preseason altogether. But he is going to be ready for week one. That's good news. He's more or less going in the 5th round. I think in standard formats, you could even see him creep a little bit higher up. I love Dobbins for what he can be in this Ravens offense. And we know Gus Edwards probably won't be available to start the season too. Are you moving Dobbins up at all in your ratings? I was already drafting him, so you're going to have to be above me in redraft formats. But are you comfortable going as high as the 4th or 5th round?
Yeah, I can see that 4th or 5th round. I mean, the fact that he's still making progress, he used to be only doing individual drills. Now he's running plays. Pretty soon he'll be doing 7-on-7, and we'll get up to full team drills. So as long as I see him continue to make progress, I'm okay paying the price that he's at here. But again, the point you just made with Buffalo and the quarterback stealing red zone carries, it's not only the quarterback in Baltimore, that'll take those red zone and short yardage touchdowns. There'll be a committee.
They're not running Lamar in the red zone. I guarantee you.
They'll have some zone reads, I'm sure.
I guarantee you Josh Allen will have more red zone carries than Lamar Jackson at the end of the season. We can Culver's board bet that right now. I feel very confident in that fact. But you're right. I mean, Lamar will steal some touches, and I think the explosiveness. Now, if you said, who's going to have more rushing touchdowns, Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson? That's closer, because I think Lamar has the explosive capability of breaking off some of these plays. But I think Dobbins is more than capable of being that red zone threat, and that's where I really love that. I think the upside is there for 1,200-plus yards, and even if he doesn't do a lot from a catching perspective, I'll gladly sign up for that for my running back, too.
Yeah, we've got him listed at 5'10", 212, which I guess – was for some reason I envisioned a smaller guy.
You're thinking of Justice Hill, right?
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah.
From one Ravens back to a former Ravens back, Mark Andrews didn't participate in the Week 1 preseason contest for the Saints. No real surprise there, given he's an aging veteran. However, Alvin Kamara,
Ingram, I think you said Mark Andrews. I know Mark Andrews.
Oh, I could have said, Mark Andrews.
That's a totally different conversation. Mark lost me for a second, and then I was like, wait a minute.
Mark Ingram, yes, the former Ravens running back, now Saints one, didn't play in the Week 1 preseason. That's fine with me. I've actually been drafting Mark Ingram in a few of the best ball formats towards the end, thinking Alvin Kamara was going to be suspended for an X amount of time. That doesn't seem like that's going to occur this season. I've already seen his redraft value in the NFFC pushed up to pick 12, 13, which is almost entirely because of Tom Kesnick tweeting about literally every single time Alvin Kamara falls in the second round. So I guess you can blame Tom for any value that you're hoping to get if you were going to draft Kamara. I have been avoiding him altogether. Anytime there is this situation where there is some concern he could be suspended, I just don't want to go that direction for the first round. I don't really feel like there's that much value for him with Jameis Winston as your quarterback. This isn't Drew Brees and Sean Payton, where Brees can only throw it 10 yards anyway, so why not throw it to Kamara? And you have Michael Thomas healthy, and Chris Olave is there. I think we're grossly misunderstanding what Kamara's value could be, even if he does play the entire season.
Yeah, he's back in play for me. I was like you.
You're going to draft him. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not.
Oh, you're not?
Way to go, Jake. Clearly not listening to me. No, I am avoiding Kamara. You are fine with him, you're saying, though.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with him. He's back in play. I mean, I was on a 100% avoid, and now I could see taking him at the turn. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Take him at the turn because I think this offense is just going to get a lot better. I mean, if Michael Thomas is what he is, I don't see that as someone that's going to take away opportunities from Kamara. I just see that as someone helping the offense, a lot more to progress and continue. Give me some Kamara at the end of the first round. I'm a lot more safe doing it now.
Yeah, Clipboard Jesus is with me. He's not taking Kamara in the second, third, or fourth round. I mean, I would probably consider him the third or fourth round. Even then, I might go wide receiver. Would you take Aaron Jones over Kamara?
That's one that
there we go. I got you on this one.
I take Kamara over Aaron Jones if I'm sitting at like 11, but if I'm at the 11, 12, or I'm at the turn.
Because you're thinking 12, you can get Aaron Jones back.
I could stake both.
Okay.
And I would be very happy with that. If I started Jones and Kamara, if that was the start of my draft, I would be very, very happy with that.
Okay. So that makes some sense to me if you want to go strategically about it, but I will take Aaron Jones every time. And in fact, I did in the NFFC draft, which we'll review in just a bit. Yeah, mid-second round. Easy layup for me for Aaron Jones, and I think he has more consistent and reliable value than whatever Kamara will be this season. So last bit of news is that we did have Marquise Brown finally return to the practice field. Obviously, he's been dealing with this hamstring injury. We know Kyler Murray, the Oklahoma teammates from way back when, also has been out with COVID and a few other different things with his knee. The duo is now back. I don't know. I have kind of waffled between Marquise Brown. Like, we know DeAndre Hopkins is out the next 6 weeks to start the season. Marquise Brown is your number one wide receiver. We saw Christian Kirk do really good things in that offense, and it sounds like Marquise Brown more or less is playing that role, and that chemistry is there. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, you tell me you have to take Marquise Brown in the fifth round or you don't get him. That makes me uneasy. Even in a full-point PPR format, and Brown has been good at racking up catches. I don't want to say good at catching the ball because he's had some pretty noticeable drops with the Lions game in particular last year. But he has been good at like a 90 target or 90 reception rate. I don't know. What's your thoughts on Marquise Brown?
Yeah, Marquise Brown is interesting. He's someone that, I didn't love a ton early on, even with the chemistry and stuff, because I feel like the solid run's going to be short-lived. Once DeAndre Hopkins comes back, he's a guy that's getting, 12 targets. Marquise Brown's a six in a game, in a game where they're throwing a decent amount, or when they throw in more than they want. That being said, I did get posed an interesting keeper dilemma today. I had previously mentioned T. Higgins at $15, and I can keep Marquise Brown for $0 because I forgot that I picked him up at the end of last year for nothing. So now things get interesting for me. Higgins' RotoWire price is out around $30 in a $200 budget auction. And with inflation, that'll probably end up being around a $40 player here. So I'm still leaning towards Higgins, but, you know, both of these guys are a little bit banged up, like you mentioned, like the hamstring thing, and Higgins is just getting back to 11 on 11. So it's a situation that I could see injuries, you know, changing my mind. But for now, I'm sticking to Higgins in that dilemma.
I feel like this podcast is just made for you to figure out your keeper decisions. Is that fair?
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm happy to help everybody else out, you know, in the same sense. And I like to crowdsource these things and you know, talk about the real life applications of situations where I would maybe consider keeping Marquise Brown because he showed up on the news.
You should put that actually on a poll. I would be curious to see $15 T. Higgins or $0 Marquise Brown. Which one are you going to keep? I'm leaning towards Higgins only because I know your league, and it feels like it's not always the sharpest tools in the shed in that one, and I think you can find some value at times a little bit later on. And even if Marquise Brown were a $15 player this year and you opt not to keep it, then bid on them. Like, I think that's actually pretty fair value, which I could expect. Whereas Higgins, you're right, $30, $40 feels safely within that range too. So maybe post that after the show to see what the rest of the conglomerate says when it comes to the value. But interesting question nevertheless. All right, let's get a word from our sponsors real quick with Blue Wire. The video audience will be right back in a second. If you're listening on all the podcast platforms, okay, skip a little bit ahead and you'll be able to catch on with us.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Okay, so we are back now. So we're going to be recapping my NFFC. It's the Beat Joe Bartle format. So we have this deal with the NFFC where different RotoWire analysts out there, if you finish higher than us, I think it's from a record standpoint, but maybe points, I'm not positive. You actually get a free subscription to RotoWire. That's always fun in games, but it's also the $250,000 top prize that we're all competing for. Yes, if I do get the top prize, I'm not going to be retiring from RotoWire, but I'll be probably writing more articles and doing less podcasts with you, Jake. Sorry. But that is our goal for these competitions. It was a hard one. In these drafts, and I actually wrote about it, I'll tweet it out post show, but you can pick your draft spot. It's the Kentucky draft selection thing. I forget what it's called. KDS is the abbreviation for it. And I love that idea. In fact, if I was to say one way in which I can improve just basic overall fantasy formats, it's letting you pick your draft spots and kind of having the ability to do so. I inexplicably got the number 8 selection. I've been on the podcast now weeks saying I want the number 3 spot or 4 spot or 2 spot. I want early on because the value when it comes back around is perfect for what I'm looking for. I despise the 8 spot. And inexplicably, I got the 8 pick. That was my second to last one. The only one I think is worse is number 9. So I was already tilting by the start of this draft, knowing that I was picking number eight. But we'll kind of go over and review the results thus far. I did take Najee Harris with my first overall pick. So number eight overall, Derrick Henry and DeAndre Swift went directly after that. This is a 6 points per passing touchdown link. That's going to be important later. Full points per reception. Otherwise, pretty basic and standard scoring elsewhere across the board. So yes, Jake, I do value Najee Harris more because of the full point PPR format than Derrick Henry. But sure, go ahead and tell me how wrong I am. I'm ready to hear it.
Yeah, so this is, you go from the ultimate, this is going to be my story the whole time through. You go from the ultimate check down kind of quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger to a quarterback that's going to run himself like Mitch Trubisky, right? And that mixed with the usage limitations and concerns there together, which, hey, by no means am I saying Harris is not a first round pick, but you go to the Titans, on the other hand, where Henry is the guy. He was healthy after his injury in the playoffs, has now has had a whole offseason to recover. Borderline healthy.
I was going
to
say, are we sure?
He was healthy enough that they were willing to use them. You know, the fact that he even played suggests that he may have made enough progress and is going to have the whole offseason to recover. He is the man, and I feel like, you know, at this time, you know, I've said this over and over again, at this time next year, we're going to be talking about Derrick Henry as a top three pick in next year's draft.
So it sounds like, Jake, your mic is having some issues right now. I'll let you kind of figure that out. But I'll explain my thought process more as you're doing that with that first overall selection. You're right. I understand what you're saying with Derrick Henry being a top weapon for the Titans offense. And again, A.J. Brown trade, Treylon Burks maybe not being able to run straight, much less do a route correctly. I know that was a bit of an exaggeration post-report, but fine. Like, there are some concerns when it comes to that for the Titans offense. Even with that being said – oh, hi, Jake. He's going to help out with the soundboard stuff. Even with that being said, I think Najee Harris I believe there's going to be an efficiency upgrade with Roethlisberger gone, Trubisky there, Kenny Pickett maybe factoring in. And I know all those weapons are around, but the efficiency upgrade is the reason why I think at 1.8 he still makes some sense from a value perspective. I guess I'll mic check you, Jake. Are you still looking good right now?
Yeah, mic check over here. We'll see if this is a little bit better. I think we're good.
You sound fine in my ears, yeah, but you were doing before. So
that's why I didn't know. This came from some listeners and from some folks outside here. So hopefully the mic is back here and I have less background and noise. Otherwise, we're just going to have to push through it.
So Najee Harris, 1.8. I think there's an efficiency upgrade with the loss of Ben Roethlisberger in the offense. That's why I took him over Derrick Henry. What do you think about that?
So hang on. Can you repeat that question? I'm sorry. I'm trying to get coached on the mic situation here.
Okay. Efficiency upgrade. The Steelers offense maybe isn't better, but I think Najee Harris's situation got better because of the Trubisky and Kenny Pickett quarterback combo, and that's why I'm comfortable taking him 1.8.
Yeah. I mean, that's the argument for Harris. That it's basically always the counter argument to his, his less passes, less usage, is he's more efficient. But I don't necessarily know how we can make that leap necessarily, that he'll be more efficient with his touches.
It's the same thing with Austin Eckler. That's why we're drafting him 1.5.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, good point.
Okay, that's also.
Sorry, I'm a little flustered with this whole audio situation here. We got this new rig and it's been rough.
No, that's totally fine. I guess I'll outline a couple of other things.
Yeah,
so again,
let's go back to the draft. I'm in now.
So I want Najee Harris 1.8. Now I should let the listeners know this ended up being a massive tout draft inadvertently. Like these things we're doing, the Beat Joe Bartle ones, it's meant to be getting newer people in to the online championship format. And if you are out there and super into fantasy sports and want to be in a competitive environment, I really think the NFFC is a perfect place to do so. But the stakes are a little bit higher, and I get if you don't want to graduate to that level. So I think we had like three or four different people. I'm going to say his name wrong. I'm sorry. Joe Gelsomino, who was drafting the 11th spot. We also had the overall NFFC RotoWire Online Championship winner in this draft. And then we also had Chris Davis as well, too, who's been a friend of the program and done a lot of different things as well with RotoWire, too, all participating in the same draft. So there's like – and, it's a possibility that of the other eight people I didn't list, maybe one or two more are just experts I'm not aware of. This was a – stacked draft, and I'm glad I didn't know about that after the fact because I would have been even more nervous during it. But it made more sense why I had the struggles
industry,
I did.
The whole industry knows you're an easy mark.
I thought it was that they won the competition. You're right; that probably is the case they won.
No, I'm just kidding. Moving on to the rest of your draft, I like a lot of the decisions that you made, and I think you made the best of some situations too, especially getting stuck after these wide receiver runs and these kinds of things. Let's keep moving here. How did the second round go for you?
Yeah, so I took Aaron Jones, and we mentioned that earlier when it comes to Aaron Jones or Alvin Kamara. I took Aaron Jones with my second round pick. Now in the NFFC, this is a third round reversal. So I made the Aaron Jones selection thinking I'm going to get one of the top tight ends, whether it be Kelsey, who was not taking the time, Mark Andrews, or Kyle Pitts with my third round selection. I wasn't intending to do back-to-back running back picks. That really wasn't my plan. But when CeeDee Lamb went off at pick 13 overall, that was really my only target that I wanted to get back at the end of the second round. It never happened. So, yeah.
I think you look at the receivers that were left. You know, you could have taken Deebo Samuel, Tyreek Hill, Mike Evans, or even A.J. Brown, I guess is what you were looking at there. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know, compared to Aaron Jones, I'd rather shore up that running back two spot. You know, it's you can love both Aaron Jones and think that A.J. Dillon's going to get more work this year. Both yes. of these guys can be incredibly fantasy relevant. And, you know, we try to find where the Aaron Rodgers targets are going to go with, you know, talking about Lazard possibly as a breakout. Sammy Watkins, we want to try to make something out of Dubs.
Dobbs.
Yeah, Dobbs. I watched that game on mute. There was another situation going on. I think Aaron Jones will get just as many, if not more, targets than past years, and he'll continue to be a heavy factor in both the running and the passing.
And I know the injury concerns are there. Like I get that with Aaron Jones. He hasn't played a full season in the last 3 years. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. To win these type of competitions, you have to have the guys that I think can be top finishing performers. And I really don't think it's that crazy to say Aaron Jones could be running back one overall next year in a full point PPR format if he's utilized the way we think he could be post Davante Adams. He's got to stay healthy, and I would never want to take him 1.1, at least given his injury concerns. But that is the potential. I mean, that's the potential more than Alvin Kamara in my mind and a few of these other guys. So, yeah, I want Aaron Jones in the second round. Third round reversal occurs. I don't know. If Travis Etienne had made it back to my pick at like 3-5, I would have had to consider things a little bit more and really went off the rails with three straight running backs. I did end up getting Kyle Pitts, though, to fall me that spot. And I wrote about it and I tweeted about it at the time. I'm going to have like 80% roster rate with Kyle Pitts at minimum for these redraft formats. Right now, if you are stuck with a 1.8 through 1.9, 10, whatever, that's the best value you can get in the third round is Kyle Pitts. And I will not be convinced otherwise with any of these wide receivers running backs.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I like Kyle Pitts. I haven't had a chance to take him yet. I'm going to need to correct that here very soon. Generational tight end athleticism, you're going to see, you know, basically is like, it will be as hard to cover as any wide receiver with just as good hands, but tight end eligible. So that's the kind of, that's what we crave there. There's no doubt in my mind that he is going to be awesome. But you don't have any concerns about the quarterback play there at all? You think you're going to find a way to, whoever's under center is going to find a way to get him the ball consistently enough?
Yeah, I have no issues. Maybe it's because I've done the SiriusXM show on Fridays with Mario now for a while, who is a stan of Marcus Mariota more than I really know many people to be. But yeah, I'm pretty convinced that that offense will be respectable. My whole theory has been the last month and a half, really getting set for this period, draft season now, I am more than comfortable taking good wide receivers in bad offenses. The only exception that I've found thus far is Amari Cooper, although I didn't take Darnell Mooney, which is another one of those good wide receiver, bad scenario. But Kyle Pitts, Drake London, DK Metcalf, they're all among my most drafted, and I think the value that they're going to get as the number one targets, don't talk about Tyler Lockett or anybody else like that, is going to be more than enough to offset any limitations you think that QB or offense has overall. And we don't know. I mean, like, we're not part of the coaching staff of the Falcons. We're not aware of what they plan to do. Arthur Smith has worked with Marcus Mariota in the past. Maybe there's some magic he can work out of them. I don't know. But even if you're projecting them to be one of the worst, I do think the workload Kyle Pitts and London, to a lesser extent, are going to have far outweighs any limitations that offense will occur.
All right, fair enough. So continuing with your picks, is it the same theme with your fourth round pick here? A good receiver in maybe a not so great offense with Jalen Waddle and the Dolphins?
I think that offense is better than the Falcons, Bears, and Seahawks. If Tua stinks as much as some think he could, you're right, that could be on there. No, I felt fortunate to get Jalen Waddle at 4-8. I mean, honestly, I wrote about in the article, 10 receivers went off with the next 14 picks that I had. I did not anticipate a run like that. And to be honest, I probably should have. The running backs were kind of bleak at that point. We already know that the NFC is a pretty running back and wide receiver heavy kind of a draft platform. So I should have been prepared, but it caught me off guard. And to see DK Metcalf, who I just talked about, I love, go ahead of Jalen Waddle was mildly infuriating. I felt pretty confident I could get Metcalf. Like, that's, again, one of the only advantages to having that 1.8 role is getting a few of these guys. That never occurred to me or never came back to me. So Jalen Waddle, I thought, was a nice enough consolation. In a full-point PPR format, even if he gets 85 receptions, which I think is more or less his over-under on DraftKings right now, I will be happy with that value for his spot. So, yeah, I'm more than comfortable taking Jalen Waddle, especially in the fourth round. I think Mario had taken him at the beginning of the fourth in his draft, which occurred a couple weeks ago. And John McKechnie, who had one a little bit earlier as well, too, was mid-third, early fourth for a while. So to have him there, here, I felt was a bit of a value.
Yeah, and I mean, that value with respect to his ADP here, he's 36 since August 1st in the NFFC. So you're looking at like the last pick of the third, first of the fourth. So right. You got a pretty solid value there. And, you know, the RotoWire must be using the over-unders because we project him for 86 receptions, 1,100 yards,
good.
And 7 touchdowns here. So, geez, I mean, he caught 104 balls last year. You know, mm-hmm. We probably expect some regression with Tyreek Hill around, but really, will there be? Maybe. Yeah, I mean, he'll get some, but he seems like more of a big play guy than someone they're going to do the dump offs to. So we'll wait and see here. Waddle could end up impressing.
So this ended up being kind of the pivot point, and I've talked about in drafts past. I despise the fifth or sixth round. Like, if you allowed me to trade picks, I would trade out of the fifth or sixth round every single time. But I just don't like whatever value you're kind of forced to get, especially if you go with Kyle Pitts in the third round, which I often tend to do. This is a 6 points per passing touchdown league. And I want to stress that again. Normally you're playing 4 points for Yahoo or ESPN, which is fine. This is 6 points per passing touchdown. Somehow, both Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes made it back to my pick in the fifth round. You know how much I love Justin Herbert. I've taken him in a couple different drafts. I think we reviewed the Vegas draft a couple weeks ago. I took him and Lamar Jackson, much to the chagrin of a lot of different people. I will double down on Justin Herbert every single time. I think the possibility for him being QB1 overall, I know Josh Allen is pretty comfortably in that spot, but if there's going to be somebody else I'm picking, right, I'm taking Herbert every time. He actually has the highest over-under of touchdowns projected to be thrown by DraftKings Sportsbook, too, at 36.5. I love Herbert. I love Herbert in the fifth round, even though it did kind of come back to hurt me from a roster construction standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it's always been a Herbert-Mahomes debate. They've been kind of neck and neck, mm-hmm. the whole thing. And, you know, I had mentioned that I went Mahomes in a previous draft. I'll go Herbert in the next draft. I think both these guys are going to have great seasons. I mean, and we go back to our strategy show, right, where
yeah.
we avoid fading quarterbacks, don't take them early. But when you get to the fifth round and someone like Herbert or Mahomes are still out there, even Lamar Jackson in the fifth round, I like just fine.
And I think even in that show, I said, I will take Allen. I will take Herbert. Those are the only two guys that I'm going up for. If not, I will wait to the Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins range to go ahead and get my quarterback. And that's what ended up happening in this draft. So yeah, in the fifth round, I was totally fine with Herbert in this format. Again, it hurt me though. You look at the wide receivers that were taken afterwards, which at this point I have just one within the first round, five rounds, Darnell Mooney, Elijah Moore. We both like Elijah Moore. Amari Cooper, fine. I'm happy that wasn't my pick. Adam Thielen, fine. I also was not going to go that direction. But it was Chris Godwin that ended up tilting me off the planet at this already, and it just gets worse from here. I thought for sure Chris Godwin was going to get faded a little bit. Didn't play in the preseason game. We're still having him work back into actual 11 versus 11 drills. He's coming off this injury. I thought for sure I could get Chris Godwin in the sixth round as a full-point PPR format. I love that. I think there's tons of value. Made a lot of sense to me. That did not happen. So when Godwin was taken 3 picks before mine, it was like I don't know what to do. Hopkins was directly taken back in the sixth round right after this pick. I'm going to talk about it. I'm not going to take Hopkins missing 6 games. I'm not taking Kadarius Toney in the sixth round. I'm not Chris List. I'm not going to do something dumb like that. I'm not taking Brandon Ayuk in the top of the seventh early. It just didn't work for me. I ended up taking George Kittle. And it's ironic, Jake, because I did this NFC draft last year, and I finished top 450, which I felt really good about. Made the company just a little bit of money because I finished so high. I took Kyle Pitts in the sixth round and George Kittle in the third round in that draft. So maybe I'm trying to get a little bit of magic going again. But if Kittle actually is healthy, top 450.
Top top 450.
Yeah, right? You all got an extra 74 cents in your paycheck because I brought home a cumulative prize that had to be dished out to all the full-timers. So you are welcome, listening RotoWire members. Yeah, so I took Kyle Pitts in the sixth round last year, Kittle in the third round, reversed it this time. If Kittle does end up being healthy, I know it's a big if. He's comfortably among the top four scorers at that position, comfortably. And that's an advantage that I like to have over a lot of other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, having two solid tight ends is a nice, it's a very nice luxury. You protect yourself against injury and still have an elite guy. And hopefully, you know, you're thinking maybe you cause a run on tight ends too, because the pick right after you there was Dalton Schultz.
But, awful pick, right? Like, there's no way I'm taking Dalton Schultz in the sixth round. I think that was more like I have the tight end position queued up. Oh, wait, somebody, I already took Dalton Schultz. Like, there's no way that the value of Schultz is equal to George Kittle, one to one.
Is it just me? Or like, I rank Hockenson and Ertz and maybe even Goddard ahead of Dalton Schultz, but maybe that's
I have Goddard and Hockenson there, but I think they're all within the same range. Hockenson for sure.
Yeah, I actually like Hockenson this year. Another guy. I need to just keep drafting more so I get shares of all the guys that I like. I mean, I don't know, man. If I were you, I'd have probably went Hopkins. So I'd be
missing six games?
Yes. Get yourself a big run. Okay, so you know, cumulative prizes. Explain to the listeners how this works again. Is it a total points throughout the year thing?
So you have to finish among the top three, more or less. There's like qualifications for it. Top three within your league to be able to move on to the ultimate tournament, which is weeks 14 through 17. Again, taking out that week 18. And then you are competing with the cumulative points that everybody else has had across all the other RotoWire online championships. So you make a top three, you're then placed into additional pool, and then you're competing with the points over the next 4 weeks scored. That's so you're sacrificing round six value of whatever somebody's going to be able to produce for 6 weeks in a total cumulative point league to possibly have the upside of hockey. Like, I'm not taking him round eight. Like, they're in this format, it did not make sense for me to do that. When there's way too many sharps out there playing, no way was I going to make that call.
Yeah, no, I think the rules and the structure of the NFFC makes this make sense. I would say so, because you need to make sure you get into that qualifying situation. You know, in a normal redraft league, I'm fine taking them because I'm confident that I can work the wire, get enough of a lineup together through those first 6 weeks to just be in a position to make the playoffs. And then I like having Hopkins as, you know, someone that would, you know, without those six game suspension, he's probably a second round pick. So I like having that extra second round pick come back and get me. And I took him in our staff league in the seventh round. So in the RotoWire Invitational, and I was pretty pleased with getting that kind of value.
And that's fine. Like, I don't mind that when you're trying to shoot for best case scenario without total points being a factor. That's what this is. Like, and I only had one wide receiver prior to this point. There's no way that's going to be a choice that I made. So seventh round, I take Drake London. I've talked about him before. I like good wide receivers and bad teams. I will continue to double down on that. I did not prepare for both Alan Lazard and Christian Kirk to be taken in the seventh round as well. That was about 15 to 20 picks higher than what their ADP was at the moment, which was completely baffling to me. I had taken Lennon in the seventh round with the assumption that I could get one of those back, whether it be Kirk or Alan Lazard, in the eighth round. To have neither of that occur was absolutely frustrating to me. And again, you look at where Lazard went, and again, the draft we posted when I post the overall podcast out, back end of the second round, Kirk back into the second round. If I had just had that 1.3, 1.4 spot, I would have been able to probably grab both of them. So I'm still pissed that this occurred and just got me either further enraged with this draft.
No, continuing to tilt there. London, we have some concerns. And you thought you were going to get Lazard or Kirk back. But I don't know. I think the rest of your draft, especially your next pick, I love Rashad Penny in the eighth round. I think, I don't quite necessarily buy the Kenneth Walker hype. And he's, again, you're taking a rookie back and assuming he's just going to beat Penny out for the job, who had a very nice run. So I think he did a very good job getting, which was, your RB3 and a solid flex play.
Right.
So you really nailed that. I took Penny myself in a similar spot in the 14 team in the SiriusXM league, and I think that's a perfect spot to grab.
We're continuing to have sound issues, so we'll round up the rest of this draft here. And again, you can review the results. I wrote a pretty good article on, at least I pat myself on the back a little bit, which you can see as well too on Twitter. So I took Robert Woods in round 9, Rondale Moore in round 10. I like the Rondale Moore selection, especially if you thought Marquise Brown was going to miss time. Well, he's back now, like we talked about, so maybe that doesn't matter so much anymore. James Robinson around 11. If there's no more of a pet project than Kyle Pitts for the RotoWire gang, it's James Robinson around 11. I had to continue to stay in form. Devontae Parker in round 12 will be the guy that I'm going to hate for the rest of the season. I like Devontae Parker. I think he could be good if he stays healthy. Would I have taken Devontae Parker straight up over Romeo Doubs? No. But I thought, man, Romeo Doubs is buried at least 150 into the queue. There's no way people are going to remember. I'll be able to get him in the round 13. I'm smart like that. Lo and behold, back into the 12th round was taken. I literally threw the computer in the air. Now, it wasn't very high because I can't have that break. That'd be very bad. But I was enraged. I mean, this draft had been crap from the start. Wanted to say a different word. And it just got even worse from there. That was the number one biggest mistake I've had. And I think so far I've done probably 12, 13 drafts. I can't think of a stupider moment than what I've done. It felt like the Homer Simpson thing. I was pissed. I was so pissed. I still am, as you can tell, Jake.
Yeah, I'm looking through that and rough spot thinking for sure he'd be coming back.
But 150 spots. It was like 150 players. Doubs is at 227, so that's 80. I'm exaggerating. How did that happen?
Well, you know, in our RotoWire Invitational, Pete Schenke took Doubs in the 12th round as well. So seeing him in the 12th round is something that I guess if you want Doubs, it's got to be round 11 now. But again, even being a Packer fan and wanting him to succeed and wanting him to be the hype that he is, there's a special Packers receiver every single year, every single training camp, who gets tons of hype and ends up, you know, just being an afterthought in the offense. And I think Doubs can get there, he can get that role eventually, but I don't know if he's gonna be if he's gonna finish among the rankings of players that should be drafted when it's all said.
We'll see. I think Romeo Doubs is significantly different than Geronimo Allison or Jake Kumerow or like some of these. Like talent-wise, Doubs is way better than those guys. So I'm not willing to make that same thing that you were saying where, okay, we have a hyped Pack receiver every year. So I guess consolation, I got a former Packer in Jamal Williams. Now I know that's going to get some eye rolls from some of the people at RotoWire. Jamal Williams might not be good, but he's going to get a decent amount of workload when he's healthy, and I think that matters for me as my running back 4. I drafted only one other running back. That was Marlon Mack, I thought around 15, 14, which I thought was pretty good value for what I was hoping for. And otherwise, two defenses, the Niners, best defense in week 1 and 2, Steelers, best defense week 3 and 4. And then I also was able to get Devin Duvernay, who is my favorite late best ball guy. And I was able to get him in the 20th round. So that's my draft. Again, I'll post the link on Twitter as well as the article review. You can see all the other experts and what they did since this was a stacked draft overall, and make fun of the tilting that I continue to have throughout the article, because I did not mince words in that as well, too. There's some opinions shared in that format.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very nice to see this in person.
Oh, yeah, very nice, I'm sure.
That we have going on here.
All right, well, that does it for us in the RotoWire Fantasy Podcast. Again, brought to you by Dynasty, and we'll be back again, hopefully, better sound issues next week, Tuesday, as we prepare for the most important draft in all of RotoWire history. It's the Stake League draft. We'll be getting you set. I guess we'll be reviewing that because the draft will have occurred I don't know. We'll have to figure out the time for it. Whether we're reviewing it or discussing it a different time, that'll be what's going on next week. So Jake and I will both be preoccupied with that. But thanks, everyone, for listening.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.